Hey everyone, this is Steve. I just wanted to take a moment to catch you up on the latest here at Populist. After our last episode, we told you to get ready for a special Valentine's Day episode of Top 10 Greatest Love Songs. Unfortunately, our friend Kirk was called away to be with his ailing father, Tom, who I am very saddened to tell you passed away last week. Kirk was able to be with him for the week prior, which was so very important, but obviously Kirk still needs to be with the family, which we would expect. Tom Trutner was an amazing person and father and is responsible for many of the great qualities that we love in Kirk. We are saddened by Tom's passing and wish the Trutner family as much peace and comfort as possible. Kirk was looking forward to doing the Love Songs episode, and we will get to that in the near future. But for now, we'd like to present an encore presentation of our original Valentine's Day episode from 2021, Romantic Comedy Movies, with special guest comedian Wendy Liebman. It's a good episode, and I hope you enjoy it. Also, we look forward to seeing you soon with original content back here at Populist. Peace, everybody. All right, all right, all right. It is Populist. Welcome, everybody. I'm Steve Hafer.
Hey, everyone. This is Kirk.
And we are here with our special, kind of special Valentine's Day episode of Populist. And that's where we're going to be talking about romantic comedy movies and the best thereof. What do you think about this category?
I had so much fun researching this.
Me too.
You know, I think we're all familiar with romantic comedies of maybe the last 30 years, but I wanted to go back. I wanted to go back to, you know, a lot of the Hepburn Tracy movies and, you know, these movies that have been called romantic comedies for years and take a look at them. And it was fun catching up on a lot of this.
Yeah, I agree. I went back and watched a couple also, and where they may not have done as well on my final list, as you'll see, there were a couple that either made the list or more so changed their placement within the list, if that makes sense. There was one that I knew was going to be on my list. I didn't know how high. And after watching again, I was like, yeah, that's up pretty high, pretty high now. So that'll be fun.
It's interesting, too, because I think that the term romantic comedy kind of came into vogue in the 70s and 80s. And what we look at as romantic comedies, you know, was defined by that, the movies of that genre, so or that era. So to go back to the 30s and 40s and try and plug those movies into that new definition was kind of interesting. You know, a lot of them were round peg, square hole kind of things.
A lot of people, I think, also got confused. Some of our listeners, there were some suggestions for movies to look at and everything. And these are not romance movies that we're doing. There's a lot of movies like
right.
The Way We Were and things that are great romantic movies, but they're not romantic comedy movies. We're trying to look for movies that have a great blend of the romance and the comedy and be good movies as well. And so that's what we're aiming for. And that's going to be our list. So you ready to start this thing?
Yeah. Yeah. This is going to be an interesting one. I'm looking forward to hearing your list.
Yeah. And since you went first last time, I'll start us off this time. My rankings reflect a little bit of what I talked about, an attempt to give weight to both the romance and the comedy. There were some films that score high on a lot of these lists that might be a better comic film, but suffered a little because they didn't execute the comedy part as well. So I'm trying to give credence to both. So a couple of the choices or the rankings may surprise people.
Number 10.
And I think this first one will surprise people. And that is the comedy Groundhog Day with Bill Murray. I think Kirk and I actually share similar opinions on this, but it still had to make my list. The romance angle of this is lesser than the comedy, definitely for the first half of the movie, because Bill finds himself in this weird situation where he's repeating the day over and over and over again. But he's with his crew, played by Andy McDowell, who plays his producer, and Chris Elliott, who's his cameraman. And he's a curmudgeon, meaning Bill Murray's character, Phil. Doesn't like them very much to start with. And as he's forced to repeat these days, he's forced to try to make them better. Because at first he tries to kill himself when things get hopeless. But then he says, you know, maybe I should just start giving to people and learning to like people. And then he starts to fall in love with Andy McDowell and go through the frustration that he has to restart over every single day. This movie is it's a comic genius, and I think it does score enough romance points as we grow along and see him change and see the love grow that it is worthy of being on the list. Plus, it brought back Sonny and Cher's song, I Got You, Babe. And we should all be thankful for that. That's my number 10, Groundhog Day.
That's a choice. You and I talked a little bit about this before we started record. I watched it recently. It does have everything that you're talking about. The big problem I had with it was Andie MacDowell didn't realize she was part of this romance until like the last 5 minutes of the movie. So it's really a solo Bill Murray story for a lot of the movie. And I agree with it. You know, he found the reasons and the desire to become a better person, and that made him attracted to her. But again, as I watched it, again, it was bubbled under. It was possible at one point to put on the list. But given that it was mainly him and not her, it was a very one-sided romance. That's why I didn't make it for my list.
Here's a weird hook. The original script before Harold Ramis took his rewrite pass on it, the original scene had them falling in love, and then Andie MacDowell's character gets caught into the loop of Groundhog Day, and she is forced. So it's like a doom and gloom, they'll never get together type of thing. I'm kind of glad they changed it.
Yeah, it was a funny movie. Again, it was purely a Bill Murray, you know, star vehicle for him. You know, and he did a great job of that arc of being a total, you know, narcissistic jerk into a nice guy. But it did not make my list.
What does start off your list at number 10, though?
My number 10, I'm going right down Broadway. This is not a movie found on a lot of lists, but it's one of my favorites. You know, you talked about the criteria you were using. I actually went to the dictionary and looked up what the definition of romantic comedy was. And what I got was movies that are lighthearted, humorous, dramatic stories centered around romantic ideals, such as true love, being able to surmount most obstacles, the perfect couple, etc. So that's what I used as kind of my jumping off point. So my number 10 is a 1993 film starring Kevin Kline, Sigourney Weaver, and Frank Langella. And that's the movie Dave, directed by Ivan Reitman, written by Gary Ross. So the film's got a great pedigree. Long story short, Kevin Kline plays a lookalike who has to take over for the president of the United States, who's a jerk. Sigourney Weaver doesn't like him, but turns out that she likes the new president, the lookalike that Kevin Kline plays.
And she's the first lady. So we understand this.
And she is the first lady. Yeah. Yeah. She's the first lady. I love the fact that it was light. It was fun. It made politicians likable, except for the Frank Langella character, who was awesome as the power hungry chief of staff. I also like too that the Sigourney Weaver character as the first lady was just as strong, if not stronger, than the male character of Dave. I thought they were very equal. This wasn't a one-sided type of thing as well. It's not overly sentimental. It found the love, the romance, and the humor in situations rather than gags. And for me, it was either going to be this or the movie The American President. But as we talked about, or as you talked about, you know, we got to find the lighthearted comedy and the romance. And The American President's a little bit more of a drama, even though it does have the best I've come back to you scene at the very end of the movie with Annette Bening and Michael Douglas. So both I love, both were on my list at one point in time. But Dave is, to me, more representative of the traditional romantic comedy. So Dave is my number 10.
Yeah, Dave just missed mine. And it's almost for the exact same reasons that you didn't do Groundhog Day and that I almost didn't do Groundhog Day, because it's this whole other situation is really the forefront and the politics of the movie and everything. And the romance blossoms a little late and it's not the key focal point of the movie, but it is a wonderful reward that he gets for being the type of person he is. Fantastic movie. It's in my wheelhouse of when you're just feeling a little down or it's a rainy day. That's one of my go-to movies. I love that film.
We've used the phrase a lot, but it's absolutely comfort food movie.
Absolutely. Good film. Ivan Reitman, right? Directed. Yeah. Yep. Awesome. Well, let's move on.
Number 9.
My number 9 is another one of those movies for me, which is pure comfort food. Two of my favorite actors, period, especially in romantic comedy movies, and that's Lawrence Kasdan's 1995 movie French Kiss, starring Meg Ryan and Kevin Kline. Also has Timothy Hutton and Jean Reno in very large integral parts. This movie's just got a lot of heart. It's a little obvious, a little formula at first, at least with Meg Ryan and Timothy Hutton's situation. He is her fiance. He leaves, goes to France, and calls her and says, I've met the woman of my dream. She's a French goddess, and I'm going to marry her. Meg Ryan gets over her fears of flying and flies over to France to try to win him back, where she is seated on the plane next to this degenerate French guy, very shady character played by Kevin Kline. And we find out that he has stolen these very expensive, they're the Cartier or I think Cartier jewels, and a small single American grapevine that he's planning to create his whole vineyard in. And we see them grow through this movie as he tries to help her get her love back. And then he's using her to help get the diamonds and the vine into the country. But he's a pretty despicable character at first. We don't like him. But as the movie goes, we, the viewers, like him more and more, and to the point that we actually kind of love him in the same speed that Meg Ryan's character does also. And I like that element of it. It's a fun movie. There's a lot of good scenarios, a lot of good lines. Kevin Kline's just always charming as heck. There's a great scene where they return back to his family farm, and that's where things really turn. And she sees him in a different light, and she sees what his roots metaphorically were, as far as him as a person. Great feel, great touch. I love the movie French Kiss.
Good choice. Again, Kevin Kline, there's going to be certain actors and actresses that reappear on this list, as we go through our movies, just because this is what they do very well. And Kline is one of those guys. He's eminently likable. You can put him in any situation. He can play the bad guy that becomes the good guy, like you're describing, and it's perfectly believable. In Dave, he had to play both the jerk president and the good guy. Mm-hmm. So, just a wide range of skills for Kline, and that can pay off huge dividends in films like these.
Absolutely. So who's your number nine?
My number nine is a film directed by Mike Newell, came out in 1994, and it is Four Weddings and a Funeral, starring practically every working actor in the British Isles at this point in time. But mainly Hugh Grant, Andy McDowell, Kristin Scott Thomas, and then a wonderful ensemble written by Richard Curtis, who is known for these kinds of films as well. I like the movie because the romance is always there, but it intertwines in these little vignettes of the weddings and the funerals. It was thoughtful as well as humorous. The scene where John Hannah is eulogizing his partner at the funeral is just absolutely touching, and it's another demonstration of love. It's a different demonstration of it than the weddings and the celebrations, but it's unbelievably poignant. It's a great counterpoint to the Four Weddings. Richard Curtis joked that he wanted to make the movie about gags, and Mike Newell, the director, really wanted to keep it real. So they ended up with this wonderful blend that every character, no matter how small, has a story, not just three funny lines. It's a romantic film about love, friendship that swims in a sea of jokes, unquote. I thought all the performances were terrific. It felt very real to me. We've all had that group of friends that you travel. We all went through that period from like 25 to 40, where it felt like we were going to three weddings a year with all of our friends.
Yeah.
And this to me encapsulated that period of our lives very, very well. The only thing that still sticks in my mind, and you'll know what I mean by this, is that line at the end where Andy McDowell is asked about the rain, and she just looks up, and it's the worst line reading. Sorry, Andy, if you're listening. It's the worst line reading I've ever seen, and Jill and I make jokes about it when we watch it. But that cannot prevent Four Weddings and a Funeral from making my list at number nine.
Wow. Sorry, Andy. Kirk's viewpoints don't necessarily reflect everybody on this show, but... Yeah.
Andy, when we meet for coffee, I'll tell you about Groundhog Day. I'll tell you about Four Weddings. We'll be fine.
There is a genre almost within the genre here in romantic comedies, and that's the movie that deals with all these multiple little storylines and everything. And there's Love Actually. There's a few of them, and they're good and they're well done. I just don't get as excited about them all. For some reason, I'm just a sucker for the more focused through lines and everything. So it is a good movie. No doubt. It didn't make my list. It's a me thing. Now, having said that, my
number eight
is a bit of a departure for what I would call a romance movie. And a lot of people wouldn't have it on their list, but I think it's fairly brilliant. And that is the movie Heart and Souls from 1993, directed by Ron Underwood. Stars Robert Downey Jr. And Elizabeth Shue is his love interest. They are both very good looking in this movie. But then there are these four souls who died in a bus accident in 1959, San Francisco, played by Alfre Woodward, Kira Sedgwick, Tom Sizemore, Charles Grodin. And then eventually the bus driver from that accident, David Paymer, shows up every now and then. And they are attached to Robert Downey Jr. as a baby. And they are kind of his guardians, and they watch over him as he grows up. And so he's become their de facto child. And he was part of their life. Then they disappeared for a while because they realized he was getting into trouble. People thought he was crazy by talking to these invisible people. And then they re-show up in his life to help him realize who his true self is, which then helps him patch up his relationship and commit to his true love. It's an interesting take. It's a great vehicle for Robert Downey Jr., who gets his body possessed by these different four characters at time to help them along their way. So he's playing a lot of different things, and he does it very, very well. It's got a big heart. It's about friendship. It's about the romance, and the romance pays off at the end thanks to his friends. I love this movie, Heart and Souls.
I love Heart and Souls as well. I just, again, it, to me, it was that round peg square hole thing. It just didn't have enough comedy, lightheartedness in it to make it a rom-com or a romantic comedy. I tried a number of ways to get it onto the list. I just couldn't do it, but I'm with you. I love it. It is sentimental. It is sweet. Robert Downey Jr. was never better. It's too bad that it's as underseen a movie as it is, because I think it really deserves a lot more exposure.
Yeah, and I think you can also see the beginnings of some of his Tony Stark character from the Iron Man series in his character from Heart and Souls. You see the beginnings of it coming. So it's a cool movie. Who do you have for number eight?
No list of romantic comedies would be complete without at least one entry from Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn. And mine is the 1942 film Woman of the Year, directed by George Stevens, written by Ring Lardner Jr. and Michael Kanin, Garson Kanin's brother, which ended up winning the Oscar for best screenplay for that year. For my money, it's the best of the Tracy Hepburn pairings. The dialogue is just crackles. I know that's an overused phrase, but they just go back and forth so well. You can see that they were incredibly comfortable with each other on screen. I read a little something that said the very first scene they shot together was their first date. And at one point, Spencer Tracy knocked over his glass by mistake. And instead of cutting, Hepburn just grabbed the napkin, cleaned it up. They got another glass in there, and they just kept the scene going, and it was seamless. I mean, these guys worked together like Tinker's Devers to Chance, you know, and the pleasure was I watched a string of these movies to try and figure out which one I wanted or more to put on here. You know, Adam's Rib and Desk Set and a few others. But I liked this one because, again, the dialogue was great, and it also dealt with what was going on in the world at the time. It's 1942. World War II is still very, very prominent in these people's lives. It's mentioned throughout the film. She is an incredibly strong woman character, which I think is amazing. And it really was the character that she went on to portray in several films after that as well, including Adam's Rib and others. It's these great, you know, male versus female dynamics that made up some of these great scenes and this great dialogue as well. The movie is in the National Film Registry. It is funny. It is poignant. It is two actors who you absolutely adore at the top of their game. And the film is Woman of the Year, 1942, at number eight.
Do you spend all of your waking moments watching reality TV? Well, you're in good company. I'm Will.
And I'm Marissa. And we're the hosts of Cheers to Chaos Reality TV and Cocktails, a new weekly podcast that covers the ever so entertaining and cringy world of reality television.
Each week, we'll be raising our glasses and diving into the latest drama and chaos from our favorite reality TV shows.
From 90 Day Fiancé to The Bachelor, you've got all your reality favorites covered.
So grab a drink and join us as we clink our glasses to the hilarious and delightful train wrecks of reality TV.
Subscribe now to Cheers to Chaos, Reality TV and Cocktails on your favorite podcast platform.
Yeah, I think it's the best of theirs also, even though she personally is fantastic in Bringing Up Baby as well. Great actress, great team. I just guess I wasn't in the real old movie mood lately. I've got a bunch of them on my honorable mentions, including Woman of the Year. But none of them made my list. I don't know why. I guess it was just the mood that I've been in lately. But can't argue that choice.
Then this is going to be the most varied list we've ever done.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, let's move on.
Number seven.
My number seven is another staple that a lot of people have seen many, many times over, and that is Nora Ephron's Sleepless in Seattle. We see Meg Ryan again. She's going to be on my list a couple of times, at least. Well, she already has been with Tom Hanks, Bill Pullman, Rosie O'Donnell, Rita Wilson, Rob Reiner, Victor Garber. It's a great supporting cast. The kids, Ross Mellinger and Gabby Hoffman, were great. It's about the love story of Sam and Annie. The difference about this love story, and something that I like, is there Annie falls in love with an idea of a person, a voice that she's heard on the radio tell his story about becoming a widower and how he misses that love that is involved with the marriage that he had, and he hopes that he gets it again someday. But he'll just keep trudging through life, and it just speaks to her heart because she's in a relationship that is unfulfilling to her. It's a nice guy played by Bill Pullman, but it's just not giving her what she's seeking in the romance and the lifelong partner that you find in a good marriage. So his son Jonah calls a radio talk show. That's where she hears the voice, and it's all about them and how their stories come together. And there's a couple chance sightings, but they don't connect. And it's all about, will this work out? Will they actually meet and get a chance to fulfill their dreams of each other, which they finally do. And I think it's really excellently done. It's a different take on a love story, but the heart of the movie is present from the beginning to the end. It flows well and it gives you a great payoff. And Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, two of the best in the business at pulling that off. So that's my number seven, Sleepless in Seattle.
I agree with everything you said, and I'll give you a little bit more when I talk about it in just a minute.
I felt weird that I had it down number seven, but I really like the movies that I have above it. I thought for sure it'd be in my top four easily, but lo and behold. But who is your number seven, Mr. Trutner?
My number seven is a film people either absolutely love or absolutely hate. It's debated in a number of different ways. Is it a Christmas movie? Is it not a Christmas movie? Is it a romantic comedy? Is it not a romantic comedy? I definitely think it's a holiday movie. I definitely think it's a romantic comedy. I adore this movie. We just found out that you probably don't. And this is Love Actually from 2003, directed and written by Richard Curtis. So I've actually got two Richard Curtis films in my top 10. Again, every working actor in England was in this film, from Hugh Grant, Liam Neeson, Colin Firth, Laura Linney, Emma Thompson, Alan Rickman, Keira Knightley, Bill Nighy, Martine McCutcheon, Rowan Atkinson. I mean, the list goes on and on. I love this movie because it tells several different kinds of love stories. There's your first love with Liam Neeson's little boy. There's rediscovering your wife and the challenges of marriage with Alan Rickman and Emma Thompson. There's you know, first love, that again, this little boy goes through, overcoming obstacles, whether it's Hugh Grant and Martine McCutcheon, whether it's Colin Firth and the language barrier, the love triangle with Andrew Lincoln and Keira Knightley. You know, there's all kinds of different love stories being told here, and it's all kinds of different comedy. There's sentimental comedy, there's touching comedy, broad comedy. There's different kinds of love stories. I think they all work. I think that's where people may trip on things. If a couple of the stories don't work, then the whole movie doesn't work. For me, all of the stories work. I always end up teary at the end of the movie when the little boy runs through the airport to get his girl. Oh, are you kidding me? That's every little boy in the world wants to be able to have done that. Anyway, I think it's a perfect romantic comedy, especially for its time period, the early aughts. And it is Love Actually at number seven for me.
I will disagree. I think they don't carry out all the stories, and it may be intended. It may be a time thing that happened in editing, but I think a couple of the stories which were interesting suffered because of it. But yeah, the airport scene, the little kid, that, yeah, How do you not? How do you not?
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on.
Number six.
My number six is probably the preultimate make me feel better movie. When I'm feeling down, I pop this movie in more than almost anything else I can imagine. And that is the movie Arthur from 1981. Directed by Steve Gordon, who also wrote it. Dudley Moore, Liza Minnelli, Sir John Gielgud, Geraldine Page, Jill Eikenberry, Barney Martin, Ted Ross. There's a lot of great actors who you may not be complete household names, but you recognize them when you see them, and they're terrific in this movie. It's a childlike millionaire drunken playboy who life forces to grow up, and he's faced with losing his fortune or losing the newfound love of his life. It's played expertly by Dudley Moore. It's a bit over the top, but man, he pulls it off. Best drunk since Foster Brooks. So many amazing quotable lines, so many laughs. And as good as Dudley Moore is in this movie, and he is very, very good, Sir John Gielgud as Hobson, the servant, is the rare jewel in the film. And he is the heart and soul of this thing. He won Best Supporting Actor for it. He facilitates a lot of the growth in both Dudley Moore's character and kind of in Liza Minnelli's character also, as he pushes her to what she really wants, but is being stubborn about. The scene where he comes to visit her, he's got the dress in the box and he meets the father for the first time. And there's a great blend of comedy and heart. And we also discover that doesn't have just a cold, that there's something a little more serious going on with his health, which is leading to a big moment, toward the end, which to me is one of my favorite moments in the whole movie. And it's not on the romantic angle. It's just Dudley Moore and Hobson in the hospital room where he's giving him all these gifts, and they're dealing with each other with the mortality of his situation. And what they really have is a father son situation. So I love that, but the romance is great. Hobson is that he is that, that squire, that, the servant who knows better than they, he's the wise guy. He helps facilitate things, helps them grow up. It's a fantastic movie with a lot of heart, a lot of laughs. Also won Best Song for Christopher Cross's Arthur's theme and Best Original Screenplay. So a lot of accolades for the movie. That's my number six, Arthur.
Are you a baseball fan? Do you watch movies, TV, or are you curious about the lives of professional baseball players or people in the entertainment industry? Then Peanuts, Popcorn, and Cracker Jacks is the podcast for you. Hosted by Jeff Santo, a writer-director and son of a Hall of Fame Chicago Cubs baseball player, this podcast comes out every other Thursday with extraordinary guest interviews and surprise Cracker Jack guests. It's fun, it's emotional, it's Peanuts, Popcorn, and Cracker Jacks.
You know I absolutely adore this movie. So you can also anticipate, too, it is higher on my list. So I will go I'll go into a little more detail when it gets to that point in just a couple.
You can't deny how good of a movie it is. What is your number six?
My number six is one that you've already mentioned, and that is the 1993 Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan film, Sleepless in Seattle. For all the reasons that you mentioned, it was Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan at their winsome best. You want these two to overcome obstacles. You know, when he sees her in the airport, you're like, no, go get. Oh, and when she sees him playing with his son, you're like, go. You know, you're rooting for these guys so much in this movie.
Don't you just love that scene?
I do. And it builds the desire, because here's the interesting thing. Throughout the entire movie, we think that Hanks and Ryan have this wonderful chemistry, but they're never in a scene together. They spend the whole movie apart. And it's not until the very end at the top of the Empire State Building that they finally get together. But you know that they have this wonderful chemistry. You're rooting for these people. It is constructed in such a way that it builds on both ends. And you can't wait for this crescendo at the end. It's predictable. It is funny. It's got great performances. And it is an unbelievably unabashed, romantic, sweet movie. So Sleepless in Seattle is my number six.
Yeah. I love the little small scenes in that movie too. I love when he and Victor Garber and Rita Wilson play husband and wife in that, even though Rita is really Tom's wife, where they're talking about An Affair to Remember, and the guys are just taking it from a guy's point of view, and they're kind of mocking how sappy and affected the women get by that movie. And it's I just love that scene.
Right.
Terrific stuff. All right, moving on.
Number five.
My number five is another Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan vehicle, and that is Nora Ephron's You've Got Mail. Also, Greg Kinnear, Parker Posey, Dave Chappelle, Dabney Coleman, Gene Stapleton, Steve Zahn all make appearances in pretty significant roles in this movie. It's a great ensemble cast, but it flows well. It's shot well. It holds up very well over time. I really like this movie, and I just keep liking every time I see it, maybe a little bit more and more. It's a story of what is it that we see in each other that really matters in these relationships. And it's adopted from the movie Shop Around the Corner from 1940. It's a beautiful depiction of life in Manhattan, the beauty and charm of the city and how it plays to people's personal makeup and affects their relationships and so forth. It's kind of an homage to the city itself and the people of it. It's all about mistaken identity, the movie. It's they're on online anonymous pen pals at first. When they do meet, they're rivals. Things fall apart. He tries to repair things online. Then as he does start to repair things, then he takes a chance and tries to repair things even more as the person that she doesn't like. And they start to find out the commonalities, and she just can't help herself but admit that he is really the guy for her. It's a much more complex movie than can be explained right here, right now, but it's wonderfully done. And those two actors, and Hanks and Ryan, do a great job. Dave Chappelle, Gene Stapleton are very real, bring tons of heart to the movie, and they're good advisors for Hanks and Ryan's characters. So that's my number five, You've Got Mail.
As we have discussed, I am not as big a fan of this movie as you are. It's very rare that you say Tom Hanks is the weak link in a film, and I thought he was. He just seemed lecherous most of the times, as lecherous as Tom Hanks can be. But it always felt like he was trying to pull something over. And honestly, at the end, if I'm Meg Ryan, I'm looking at a guy who lied to me and put me out of business, and yet I'm going to fall in love with him. That was just too many hurdles for me to jump through, or too many hoops to jump through to get to that last moment where, again, the only real romance in the film between the two of them was that last 30 seconds at the end of the movie. So enjoyable film, based on a classic, a Jimmy Stewart classic, as you said. But I just couldn't get it into my top 10.
Yeah, but she doesn't know that he's lied to her until she is already fully in love with him and everything that is in the last scene, because all the other conflict that she has with him before is because he is the competitor that's going to knock her out of business. And she thinks he has no heart and soul because the little guy is going to lose to the big corporate conglomerate. And so I think he's not lecherous. I think he goes above and beyond to try to win her, because she and her personal makeup and her personality, who she is what is attractive to him and what he is falling in love with. So he has to change his image so she doesn't see him as the big bad guy. I don't know. I love it.
And that's why we do these lists.
Let's find out what your number five is.
Number five is from 1954, directed by Billy Wilder, with Humphrey Bogart, Audrey Hepburn, and William Holden. And that movie is Sabrina. Saw it for the first time in doing research for this podcast, and it absolutely just took my breath away. It was one of the more even of the older romantic comedies, from start to finish. I thought they told a direct story, a very through line story. We knew exactly what was happening. You've got the two rivals, in this case, they're brothers. William Holden, who I thought was as joyous and carefree as I've ever seen him in a movie. And then you've got Bogart, who is cast completely against type as the caring older brother, who's just trying to keep the business together and just wants what's best for Sabrina and William Holden. And he's the one that has to dawn on that he's actually in love with this woman. I thought Audrey Hepburn was pitch perfect, despite the challenges she apparently had working with Bogart. Bogart apologized to Billy Wilder at the end of the filming, saying I was wrong with what I was trying to do, personal things, blah, blah, blah. But there were challenges. I mean, he wanted his wife at the time, Lauren Bacall, to be in the role and not Audrey Hepburn. The age difference was obvious. And he's presented challenges during the film. But the end result was just a very sweet, wonderful love story comedy told over an hour and a half. And one of the things that really put it on the list for me as well is they used the song La Vie en Rose prominently throughout the film. That's one of the most romantic songs ever recorded, as far as I'm concerned. The Edith Piaf version is just sublime. So you get these great performances, simple, timeless story told very well. But Sabrina with Bogart, Hepburn, and Holden, directed by Billy Wilder, is my number five.
Yeah, really one of the better older movies for sure. The remake wasn't half bad either with Harrison Ford. It pales in comparison to the Bogart one, but it's not a bad movie. It's a very enjoyable movie. It's very nice. Julia Ormond. Good choice. When you told me you were watching for the first time, I had a feeling you were going to like it. So I'm glad to see you made your list. That's cool.
Yeah. Really, really enjoyable.
Moving on.
Number four.
My number four gets into that territory that I have with most of our lists, where a lot of these top four can almost slot into whatever position in the top four. Mine is a perennial favorite of a lot of people, and that is Pretty Woman, Gary Marshall's film from 1990. Features the song Oh Pretty Woman by Roy Orbison, and it's a great film. Gary Marshall doing his Gary Marshall best. Richard Gere, Julia Roberts, Jason Alexander, Hector Elizondo, Laura San Giacomo, Ralph Bellamy, Larry Miller in a small part, he's fantastic in that role. It's a modern day fable, basically, or fairy tale, for lack of a better term. It's glamorous. It's smart. Roberts and Gere suck you in, and you pull for them right from the very beginning for both of them. They're completely different characters, but you can see where they might have attractions on different levels before they actually do fall in love. He gives her great self-worth, which she might have been lacking in a little bit self-esteem. She gives him the ability for some compassion and wanting a life partner and wanting to just approach life in a different way other than the cutthroat way that he had approached life. There's wonderful, wonderful scenes. A shopping scene on Rodeo Drive is fantastic, underscored by Pretty Woman. It's a great montage. Hector Elizondo is the heart in this movie, much like John Gielgud is the heart in Arthur. He's the guy who sees things that other people don't see, and he patches things up, and he hints, and he guides, and he turns, and he's wonderful in the role. It's just a good movie altogether. There's not much more I can say. It just flows. It's smooth. It's enjoyable. It's Pretty Woman.
It is a very sweet, wonderful film. It's a very 80s film. I think the 80s were actually a very rich and fertile period of filmmaking. It didn't make my top 10. And not because it wasn't good. I just thought I had 10 films that were stronger than that, but seriously bubbling under and could very easily make the top 10 on another day.
Who did make your number four?
My number four, I'm going to stay in the olden days. And we're going to head back to 1940 for a film starring Katharine Hepburn, Cary Grant, and Jimmy Stewart, directed by George Cukor. And that is The Philadelphia Story. Won two Oscars. Jimmy Stewart won for Best Supporting Actor, I think. And Donald Ogden Stewart won for his screenplay. This is an example of Golden Age stars at their finest. The rapid fire banter. Hepburn is exactly who you expect her to be. Stewart is exactly who you expect him to be. Cary Grant is exactly who you expect him to be. And when the three of them get together, there is genuine electricity. There's genuine affection. They work together well. We would have been happy if she'd landed with either Grant or Stewart, which is kind of a unique proposition in these kinds of things, but it does play out to that will they won't they kind of thing, which is a trope of the romantic comedy. And as I was doing research on this, apparently the genre of quote remarriage was very popular in the 30s and 40s, and that was stories about couples divorcing, flirting with others, and then getting back together again. I guess that was kind of a subgenre of the romantic comedy in the 30s and 40s. And this is the best example of that from that time period as well. I thought it was engaging. It moved. It was unique. It's Cary Grant at his best. It's Stewart at his best. Hepburn at her best. really enjoyed it. Hadn't seen it in a while, rewatched it for this and fell in love with it all over again. No pun intended. My number four is The Philadelphia Story from 1940.
Yeah, it's a classic. I said I was in a mood. For some of the same reasons that you penalize a couple of the newer movies like Groundhog Day and Heart and Souls, I think I penalize some of the older ones because there's comedy, but the romance is more, it's the situation of who's she going to choose, and there's not as much of the big heartfelt romance that I was looking for, the real sappy love story thing. But it is a romantic comedy, and I think on other years it probably makes my list. How do you deny that cast? It's an amazing cast.
Concur.
Number three.
My number three is one of my all-time favorite movies, and I had a little trouble putting it on this list, but then I rewatched it and I said, no, it so deserves to be on the list and it deserves to be high on the list. And that's Peter Bogdanovich's movie, What's Up, Doc, from 1972, starring Barbara Streisand and Ryan O'Neal. It's the film debut for Madeleine Kahn, the great comic actress, Kenneth Mars, Austin Pendleton, round out the cast. It's a screwball comedy. It is a farce in the classic definition of a farce, and it's almost a French farce. It's got the four matching plaid travel bags, a mistaken identity. One's got Barbara Streisand's personal clothes in it. The other one's got Ryan O'Neal's Igneous Rocks for his musicology award that he's up for. Another one's got top secret documents. Another one's got a bunch of expensive jewelry in it. And they keep getting moved around like a shell game. It's wacky. It's great dialogue. They break the fourth wall every now and then with Ryan O'Neal's looks to what's going on with his situation as he's stuck between these two women, his fiance, played by Madeleine Kahn, who is a very undesirable woman and a nag and just she's a handful. And then there is Barbara Streisand's character who just sees him in a drugstore and thinks he's cute. And she wants to get to know him better and force her hand in his mind into a relationship. And she is the unstoppable force. Set in San Francisco, which is a great backdrop for a romantic comedy. It's got probably the best chase scene perhaps in any movie. I love it, involving a delivery bike, three-wheel bike, black sedan, a Cadillac, a taxi, a VW Beetle, a Chinese dragon. There's wet cement. There's a pane of glass going back and forth. It's great stuff. It's fun from beginning to end. Written by Buck Henry, David Newman, and Robert Benton. It's 1972's What's Up, Doc.
And that's an interesting choice because it's a great movie. Do not get me wrong. Did not make my list, mainly because, and I'm going to split hairs here, I think there is a difference between romantic comedies and screwball comedies. And I think, to your point, What's Up, Doc is a screwball comedy. I had Foul Play in consideration for a little bit, but I took it off again for that screwball comedy kind of angle. Same thing with the movie The Great Race. You wouldn't think of it as a romance, but you know, it was Tony Curtis and Natalie Wood falling in love as they do this epic cross continent race. But again, they felt more like screwball comedies to me as opposed to romantic comedies. So while I agree with the choice, it's a terrific movie, that's the reason it didn't make my list.
Yeah, and initially that's what was kind of the back of my head also. But then I watched it with a critical eye for the romance, and I think we're wrong on that instant, to be quite honest. She has the intention of, she wants romance basically with this guy, for might start as superficial reasons. But then early on in the movie, the shots of him, he just sees what she brings and that he is fascinated by her. And he's stuck in this position where he's trying to do what's right and stay with his fiance, and for whatever reasons, but he just can't stop the force of this onslaught by her and his feelings for her. So to me, it's very much a bigger romantic movie than, say, The Great Race or, you know, a lot of these other what might be screwball comedies. What's your number three?
My number three, we're going to take it all the way to the beginning. I'm going to stay back in the 30s and 40s. And this is a film from 1934. Some say it originated the screwball, or not the screwball, the romantic comedy genre. And that is the Frank Capra film starring Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert, It Happened One Night. first film to sweep the major categories at the Oscars and the first romantic comedy to win an Oscar as well. This is, for a lot of people, ground zero for romantic comedies. The dialogue between the characters could be sharp at times. And that's one of the foibles of some of these earlier films. But there's absolutely sparks between Clark Gable, Claudette Colbert. They really kind of set the template for romantic comedies. The scene of the blanket going up in the room, the walls of Jericho, that's been duplicated a number of times. The famous hitchhiking scene. It's interesting, again, on the National Film Registry, but this is one of the last films to be made before the Motion Picture Code was fully enforced in 1934. So you could have Claudette Colbert showing a little more leg than you might be able to after this movie was made. And it was also said that Clark Gable had one scene where he took off his shirt, and that killed the undershirt industry. The sales of undershirts plummeted after that because Gable looked so good. It is a fun film. It is that you know, opposites attract kind of film. You want these kids to get together at the end. There's Gable, there's Colbert. It's classic Hollywood, and it happened one night. 1934 is my number three.
Interesting. Moving on.
Number two.
My number two is, I don't know, it was a best picture, and that is John Madden's 1998 movie Shakespeare in Love, written by Tom Stoppard, one of the all-time great playwrights in America. Mark Norman also wrote it. Won Best Picture, won Best Screenplay, won Best Actress for Gwyneth Paltrow, Best Supporting Actress for Judith Dench as Queen Elizabeth. Joseph Fiennes, it's kind of his introduction to the American film audience, the younger brother of Ralph Fiennes. Jeffrey Rush is in it, Ben Affleck, Colin Firth, Tom Wilkinson, Imelda Staunton. It's a really good cast. It's a fictional tale of Shakespeare suffering from writer's block and a tale of him finding his love in a young heiress played by Gwyneth Paltrow, who's posing as a man to audition for one of Shakespeare's plays, which is Romeo and Ethel, the pirate's daughter, which later becomes Romeo and Juliet. Since women couldn't be in the theater legally back then in Elizabethan times, she had to pose as a man to try to get into this play. It's amazingly shot, as you would expect from a best picture winner. Strong script, great cast, great settings and costumes. The love story almost mimics many of the story points of Romeo and Juliet. So you see it happening in real life as he is writing it. It's not a direct draw, but you see the similarities as he's writing and creating this play. And as the play comes together, so does their love. There's peril involved because she has been betrothed to Colin Firth's character, who's just a bastard in this movie, a rich guy about to go off to Virginia. She wants to be with Shakespeare, and it doesn't necessarily end the way we want it to, but it still is a wonderful movie about love, about them, flows great, a lot of action as far as the dialogue and watching them put this play together. So Shakespeare in Love is my number two.
It's a great choice. I had it on and off the list several times. Dropped it maybe yesterday. It's certainly a departure from the typical romantic comedy that you think of as a romantic comedy. But that shouldn't be held against it. I think it does fulfill all of the qualities of a romantic comedy. Again, I will say, I think I had 10 films on here I liked better than it, but again, you know, let's do this list next week and it could easily get into the top five. It is a sweet movie. It's a wonderful movie. Yeah. Very well done. Production values are terrific. Just a great all around film.
I find myself drawn lately to things that are approaching the typical telling of a love story in different ways. As you can see, there's four or five odd looks at approaching a love story on my list. And that appeals to me. So what is your number two?
My number two is a movie you've already mentioned, which is Arthur from 1981 with Dudley Moore, Liza Minnelli et al. This movie does not get the love it deserves. This is a very funny movie. I thought the romance was very true and very sweet. I thought Liza Minnelli was terrific in this film. The soundtrack is great. The Christopher Cross song is still, I mean, this movie is now 40 years old, but that soundtrack still, it sounds very contemporary, sounds, you know, very enjoyable still. It's an incredibly quotable movie. And for a comedy, to me, that's essential. I mean, how many times have you and I done lines from Arthur back and forth, you know, for hours upon end?
Yeah.
That are just, you know, just doing the accent. I mean, you're a hooker. I was doing great with you. I mean, just little sly things that sneak by that are just perfect. I agree with everything you said about John Gielgud and their relationship. It's got some wonderful life lessons, not only about love, but about death. Dudley Moore is terrific, and I knew they took a chance on him at that point in time. I mean, the movie is so good, not even the Russell Brand remake can bring it down. I mean, it is that good. So, Arthur, New Year's Eve, third time this week, is my number two.
Immensely, immensely quotable movie. Outside of Mel Brooks movies and some things, I think it's the most quotable movie out there, as far as you and I are concerned, at least. All right, and that brings us to our number one. So let's recap our 10 through 2s. My 10 was Groundhog Day, followed by French Kiss at number 9, the first of the Meg Ryan movies on my list. Heart and Souls, Robert Downey Jr. movie at 8. Number 7 was Sleepless in Seattle. Number 6 was Arthur, which we just talked about. You've Got Mail with Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks at number 5. Number 4 was Pretty Woman. Number 3, the Barbra Streisand Ryan O'Neill comedy, What's Up, Doc? And Shakespeare in Love, the Best Picture Award winner, at number 2 for me. Who was your 10 through 2?
Starting at number 10, the 1993 film Dave with Kevin Kline and Sigourney Weaver. Four Weddings and a Funeral was number 9. The Spencer Tracy, Katharine Hepburn classic Woman of the Year was number 8. Love Actually from 2003 was number 7. Sleepless in Seattle with Hanks and Meg Ryan was number 6. Sabrina with Bogart, Hepburn, and Holden was number 5. The Philadelphia Story, again with Katharine Hepburn, also Cary Grant and Jimmy Stewart, was number 4. The Clark Gable, Claudette Colbert classic from 1934, It Happened One Night, was number 3. And the wonderfully charming Arthur from 1981 was my number 2.
Nice list. You were definitely scooping up the old stuff where the romantic comedies began, and I was much more in the more contemporary, faster paced stuff. So it brings us to
number 1.
And wouldn't it be funny if we both had the same through all this same movie as number 1? We'll find out. My number 1 is the Rob Reiner classic When Harry Met Sally from 1989. The wonderful movie It Had to Be You from Harry Connick Jr. leads us off. And I'm going to guess, does this sound familiar to you, Kirk?
Yeah, I'm looking at my list. And When Harry Met Sally is at the top of mind. I mean, let's face it. If you think of romantic comedy, this is the first movie that comes to mind. It comes to everybody's minds. This movie is the Barry Sanders of romantic comedies. He had that great Heisman season, and then there was everybody else. When Harry Met Sally is just the pinnacle, and everything else is in its wake.
Okay, first of all, you have a serious problem. That's your second sports reference during the romantic comedy episode, because you did the Tinkers to Evers to Chance Cubs reference earlier in the show. What I like about this is it's Rob Reiner, who's one of my favorite comedy directors, and the screenplay was by Nora Ephron, who is also on my list as a director for, I guess, at least one of the movies here on You've Got Mail. Meg Ryan, Billy Crystal, Carrie Fisher, Bruno Kirby. And Sleepless. Dur. Meg Ryan, Billy Crystal, Carrie Fisher, Bruno Kirby. Great foursome to head this up. Let's not make any mistakes. It is Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal's movie from beginning to end. We pick their story up in 1977 as they're traveling from the University of Chicago back to New York, and they don't like each other. And we pick them up over the first 10 years as they're seeing each other every 4 or 5 years, and they're still, you know, not real friends or anything. But then after those 10 years, they reconnect and relationships have broken up. Marriages have filed for divorce, things like that. And they become true friends in helping each other out, and they really like each other. And that's what grows into this love. It's a great telling of a love story. They are complete opposites at the beginning. And as we travel through their story, we're traveling through the seasons and the years with Manhattan as a beautiful backdrop. It's a beautiful film, visually, but it's a funny film with Crystal. Meg Ryan holds her own. There is the iconic scene of all iconic scenes where she is showing how women can fake orgasms in the middle of the diner. That movie gets shown on so many look back at comic films, specials. It's great.
everything you said. I mean, this answers the question that has been out there, you know, post-sexual revolution, which is, can men and women just be friends? Can they? And this was at the heart of the whole thing. And it was handled so deftly with thoughtful dialogue, funny dialogue, quotable dialogue. To your point, the memorable scenes, whether it's the deli scene, you know, one of my favorite is his admission of love on New Year's Eve. You know, when you want to spend the rest of your life with somebody, you want it to start right now. I'm paraphrasing, but yeah. I mean, that's just a line that cuts right to the heart of the matter. It's absolutely terrific. Wonderful soundtrack. You'd mentioned New York was kind of a featured player in the film. I think the soundtrack was as well. I think Mark Shaiman did a great job of the orchestral stuff, and the Harry Connick Jr. songs that were peppered throughout also really lent a great quality to this film. It's very rewatchable. It is a terrific comedy. It's a terrific romance. It's a terrific romantic comedy, and that's why it's mine and yours and our number one.
I also love the scene after they first sleep together, and he freaks out, and so he has to excuse himself in the morning, and then that affects them both, and they're freaking out about what has just happened with them. And so their instinct is to call their best friends. So he calls Bruno Kirby. She calls Carrie Fisher, who in the movie are married at that point. So they're sitting in the same bed. They each have their own phones, and they get these calls. And so they're talking to their friends as they're sitting next to each other. And it's a great, fast dialogue, really well thought out scene. Very, very smart.
And give Rob Reiner a lot of credit. You know, he had a period of time where he could have had, at least for me, three or four films on this list.
Yeah.
You know, he put together a really good stretch of work. What missed your list? What I mentioned a couple of things that bubbled under. What missed?
Well, Princess Bride just missed it. The other Rob Reiner film.
Yep, exactly.
We talked about some of the old films that you have mentioned, and also Roman Holiday, the Gregory Peck, Audrey Hepburn movie,
yeah,
which I love a lot. The French movie Amelie, believe it or not, almost made my list. Mm-hmm. It's very quirky. Audrey Tautou, who most people know from The Da Vinci Code. She plays a co-star to Tom Hanks in The Da Vinci Code. She's fantastic in it. And it's, once again, a very quirky, odd look at a relationship, but it's very well done. So yeah, what about you? What are some of your just misses?
We mentioned a couple, you know, Foul Play, you know, Chevy and Goldie were a couple of films back in the 70s and 80s. You mentioned Princess Bride. I don't think a lot of people would think of it as a typical rom-com, and it probably isn't. It's more of an adventure film and has romantic and comedic overtones.
Yeah, it's not typical.
Fairy tale, but you know, it's terrific. One that was on the list till literally like 5 minutes before we started, and that was Tootsie. With Dustin Hoffman and Terry Garr. Again, you don't think of it as a romantic comedy, but there is a love story throughout that film.
Oh, it's very much. He's just trying to get work, but then he meets her, meaning Jessica Lange. And it's very much a love story after that. Mm-hmm. And so he's trying to get the best of both worlds and make it work. And he sacrifices his finally burgeoning career to try to save the love. Broadcast News actually came close for me also. William Hurt, Holly Hunter, and Albert Brooks.
Yeah, I was there.
So yeah, good list.
I was going to cheat with one of my entries, and I was actually going to use the Thin Man series. Yeah. You know, there wasn't that one that just jumped out as head and shoulders above the others. So
right.
I was going to do the series, and then I thought that's too much of a stretch and a cheat, and Steve's going to give me crap, so I didn't do it. I think this is our most varied list.
Oh, easily. Easily. But it's funny that we still have the same number one.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of the trap you fall into when you do lists and things. That there are certain subjects where there are clear cut number ones.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, that does it for us. We're going to take a little break, and we will be back in just a few minutes to continue on with the show.
Okay, show of hands. Do you stick around for the credits at the end of a movie or a TV show? You might, but most folks don't. And even then, you might not be familiar with half the jobs on there. My name is Bruce Rand Berman. When I came out to LA a while back, I found there was a lot more to this industry than I realized. With the help of some great friends and mentors along the way, I've been able to chart my course to where I am today, an experienced television producer doing a podcast about all the different jobs there are in Hollywood and how to get them. So check out Call Time on your favorite podcast platform. You'll hear all about the industry straight from the mouths of the real people who work hard every day and night in the trenches on set and in the office. Yeah, this is my podcast, but it's your call time. Don't be late.
And we're back. And as in tradition, the second half is
the guest list.
And today on the guest list, we have a stand-up comedian. She has performed on Carson, Letterman, Leno, Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, as well as Hollywood Squares. She's a veteran of comedy clubs and events throughout North America and has starred in specials for HBO, Comedy Central, and Showtime's Wendy Liebman, Taller on TV, as well as being a semifinalist on America's Got Talent. So we'd like to welcome that Wendy Liebman, who is Taller on TV, Wendy Liebman. Wendy, it's great having you here. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Steve and Kirk. And yes, I am taller. I look taller on TV. That's what everybody tells me when they meet me if they have seen me on TV. Go, oh, you look tall. You look like 6 feet tall.
Oh, it's great to have you. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
It's a great title. When you first came out with that, it just made me laugh. And even though I knew you, that's perfect. Great title. Loved it.
Well, the original title was Playmate of the Year because I was Playmate of the Year in kindergarten. But there was like some kind of trademark or something. So anyway, I do like
that's a forward thinking kindergarten, if you ask me.
I was just fun to play with on the playground.
See, for me, I'm wider on podcasts, so
I'm shorter on Zoom, although Zoom does add 10 pounds, I have realized during the quarantine.
Yes, I'm glad to hear you say that. All right. So, Wendy, on the first half of the show, Kirk and I, we revealed our list, and we were vastly different in the aspect that Kirk tended to gravitate more toward the old classic comedies like The Philadelphia Story or It Happened One Night, where I was more toward movies made from the 80s and more modern times. Do you have a personal preference? Do you like the older comedies more, or do you just pick and choose? Is just good, good? What's your preference?
I really like whenever the movie was made, I guess I judge a movie. Like if I were a movie critic, I would just say I liked it or I didn't like it or I loved it. I tend to remember movies that change the way I breathe. Let me explain that. If I laugh a lot or if I'm scared to death, I'm holding my breath. But in a romantic comedy, it's a mixture of laughing and crying, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter when it was made. I like it if it has changed the way I breathe. Does that make sense?
It does.
And it's not scientific or anything. It's just I realize that is my criteria. I don't think about it. It's just... Yeah, I just tend to remember things that made me laugh and cry a lot.
Well, I think we would all be in trouble if we're using, you know, the scientific method to decide how we like our films as well, because it is tough. You know, I liked Steve's breakdown of older films, newer films, you know, but at the end of the day, it's just got to be funny and it's got to be romantic and it's got to be light. I actually went to the trouble of looking up the definition of romantic comedy in the dictionary, and they said, you know, it was a light. Dramatic presentation where the tropes of true love, whether it's overcoming obstacles or the perfect couple, was kind of the definition of it. And that's why I found it hard to categorize some of the older films, but they had to play in there because you had such great actors and such great storytellers from back then. And it was interesting to see the difference between the two of them. So when you look at a romantic comedy, what wants to jump out for you? Is it the comedy? Is it the romance?
Well, I think it's both. I think, you know, in life in general, I think people are connected with each other because of their sense of humor. I think that's what makes for any great relationship. Do you have a similar sense of humor as that person? So I think that there's a lot of comedy in it, that there's like a real attraction. So the higher the comedy, the heightened the attraction.
Yeah. That
any sense?
No, that makes total sense. It's unlike regular comedies where I'm just going there purely for the laughs. Romantic comedy movies, obviously, we're looking a little bit for that balance of romance and comedy. But I got to be honest that the romantic aspect is really kind of the hook for me. I'm expecting the comedy, but I want to be dazzled by the romance and that special moment. For example, in What's Up, Doc? Ryan O'Neill needs some time to think. He goes up to the top of the hotel on a floor where they're working on construction. They're painting. There's painter tarps all over. He finds a piano. He starts hitting a couple notes. Then he removes the tarp and reveals Barbara Streisand lying there. And it's a great beauty shot for her. And then she ends up singing As Time Goes By. And they play a little duet. And then she falls off the piano on top of him. They kiss. And there's that moment. Are there any moments that come to your mind that were those really big standout romantic moments from any romantic comedy movies?
Well, it's not even on my list. But I do remember in Say Anything, there was a scene where the kid... Okay, let me tell you something first before I describe this. I don't remember, like, names. And I don't remember... Except Jerry Maguire, I remember that name. But I don't remember, like, exact plots of anything. When I think about movies, I go, do I remember feeling, like, elated afterwards? Or how do I feel right now after I see this movie? And that's what stays with me. So I'm sorry if I don't remember like exact scenes, but I do remember in Say Anything, the kid is on the lawn holding up his boombox. And I just remember that was like an
yep.
Oh, kind of moment.
That's a great moment. And John Cusack, that actor who Kirk has actually worked with, he did a romantic comedy, Must Love Dogs, with Diane Lane and John Cusack. And Kirk was the deli manager, the meat market guy.
Boy, don't I feel stupid now for not even thinking of that movie from my list.
Wait, you were in that movie?
Yeah. I was, yeah.
I was in a few movies, but they were home movies, but they were like at Disneyland and stuff. Not a wide release.
So not the Playmate of the Year?
No. You were in Must Love Dogs?
Yeah.
I was in the Aristocrats, but that's a documentary.
A very funny documentary. I think you've given us another topic for a show.
The Aristocrats or documentaries?
Or just documentaries. Yeah.
No, we might very well do that.
Well, you have to include my husband's documentary, The Boys.
Which is fantastic.
If you do that.
About the Sherman Brothers, yeah.
The Sherman Brothers.
Watched it a couple of times. First thing I watched when we got Disney Plus. Plug.
Yes. First thing I watched was Hamilton. But now I'm not talking about romantic comedies anymore.
That's okay.
So let me get myself back on track.
All good stuff.
So, yes, that scene from Say Anything.
Yeah, that's it. That's... Definitely a standout scene for sure.
Oh, and I have one other standout scene from when in one of my top 10, actually, it was in the movie Love Actually, where the rocker, where the old, see, this is where I don't know exact, like, was it somebody came back to see the rock, the old rock guy?
Yeah. Bill Nighy.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Bill Nighy. Yeah.
Yeah. His manager comes back.
Right. And I just remember that was the moment where it was like, oh, so I guess that's where I go, oh, that's what I love. Is that vague enough?
No, that's great. And Love Actually was one of Kirk's movies.
It was, but that's not old.
It's not. I had a balance. I had a balance of old and new.
Yeah, he had four more modern films, four or five. Yeah, but it was very much balanced.
You know what? I have a feeling it was the recency effect, because you said that you watched a lot of the old movies recently. So maybe it's just because you've seen them recently.
There's a good possibility of that. You know, to your point, they're ones I had just seen. And, you know, of course, you always want to look smart
So, Preston Sturges and Frank Capra, of course they belong on that list. But I like what the conversation about moments, because you're right. I think there are certain moments you remember, you know, in all movies, but romantic comedies also have them. There's the scene in Moonstruck where Cher slaps Nicolas Cage and says, "Snap out of it." I mean, everybody remembers that scene. There was a movie I wanted to put on my list, but couldn't find room for it. And that's The American President. And the very end, when Annette Bening comes back to Michael Douglas and they have that tearful reunion in the Oval Office, you know, "I didn't come back because you put 455 in the drawer." And I don't know, you know, that, you know, it's funny, it's humorous, but you're just so glad these two crazy kids got back together again. But those are those little moments that you just love watching, and they suck you back into the movie every time.
Like, do you watch a movie and go, "Oh, I hope these two people get together," or "That's a potential love interest for somebody"? Like, do you get excited before they actually get together and think these two should be together?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so, at least to a degree.
Yeah.
In fact, we were just talking about that on The Beauty of Sleepless in Seattle. Is, as Kirk pointed out, is they don't ever share screen time. It's just they're falling in love, or at least having their interest piqued of the thought of each other, the reputation of each other, what they've learned about each other. And so you're rooting for both of them, and you want that you want that meeting to happen. And when it finally does, that's what makes the movie. It's magical. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I get three movies mixed up, three romantic comedy movies mixed up. I get mixed because I'm old, you know, I'm getting older, although I still have both of my baby toes. So,
can I guess what the movies are?
Yes. There are three of them.
I'm going to say Sleepless in Seattle.
Exactly.
You've Got Mail and When Harry Met Sally.
Are you psychic?
Yeah.
But why do we do that? Were they all written by Nora Ephron?
Or she had a hand in it. She either directed it, and or like Rob Reiner directed Sleepless in Seattle, but she wrote it.
Right.
You know, so yeah, she, there's that feel.
Yeah, she kind of has that genre sewn up. Or Meg Ryan, yeah.
Well, that brings me to a question. Who are some of the actresses and actors or directors, since we were just talking about, that you see as being particularly adept in this genre? Well, we just already kind of talked about Meg Ryan and Nora Ephron. Who else do you really, when you see that they're going to be in this movie, it already gives you a sense of confidence that they're going to nail this. This is going to be great.
Well, Bill Murray.
Ah.
Who else? Woody Allen.
Yeah, that's one we didn't talk about. It almost made my list, was Annie Hall. And
That's on my list.
Yeah.
Why wasn't that on your list?
There was so many things that could have been. And as we tend to always get caught up in saying that almost made my list, no matter what the topic is. And it was, but it's just, you find 10 other movies, for whatever reason, at least on this particular day, are just speaking to you more.
Exactly. That's why I had to make my list. I mean, I have like 100 movies here, but it's kind of like Marie Kondo. What's her method? Anyway, it's whatever sparked the most joy is how I made that list. Like, when I remember it, is it like a little light bulb went off? That's how I made my list.
Well, one of the things we always say too is, okay, so you make your list, then you see another film and you go, okay, that deserves to be on the list, but what do you take out?
I know.
That becomes the hard part. It's puzzle pieces.
How do you do this all the time, make these lists?
It's weird. It's fun because of the research aspect of it, but then it gets frustrating because certain things are left out, or we get done recording an episode and then I'm always like, I forgot to say that or whatever. Cause you just get caught up in, you know, it's, but overall it's fun. When you sat down to make your list, what did you use as your own personal criteria? You already mentioned that is, how did it make you feel? But then you probably, as you said, you probably had 30 or 40 potential candidates. What got you down to your final 10?
Some of the actors bribed me. How did I get it down? I really don't know. I went through the list. I took your list from your website. And then I also looked up, I Googled romantic comedy just like Kirk did. And I just also Googled romantic comedies, the list that they have online, like the AFI list. And anyway, I just worked my list through, put three check marks, three stars next to ones that I loved, two, one, and then even the ones that don't have stars, they're so great. Like Bull Durham, it was great, but it just didn't make the top 10. But I do remember there was this really sexy scene where she's getting undressed or he's getting undressed. Somebody was getting undressed.
It's always a good thing.
And that was the romantic part.
And I meant to tell that to Kirk before we went to break that, yes, Bull Durham was high on my honorable mention list. And I think because we did the favorite baseball movies episode as our first episode of the show, it was kind of like, oh yeah, I've already been there. And so I had that feeling that I've talked about it, but it's so worthy. It's so great. It is a fantastic romantic comedy movie. It just happens to be baseball centric. Well, let's get down to your list and let's reveal the top 10 for Wendy Liebman, starting with number 10.
This is controversial, but my number 10 favorite romantic comedy is Pretty Woman. And I say it's controversial because I shouldn't be loving the whole patriarchal man and hooker dynamic. But it was a funny, lovely movie.
I had it on my list.
So that's number 10.
If you're going to trust anybody with a hooker with a heart of gold story, it's Gary Marshall.
Yes. Number 9 is Pretty in Pink.
Good one.
I love Ducky, and I just think that movie is just charming. Number 8 is 13 Going on 30. I just always wanted Jennifer Garner to get together with Mark Ruffalo. I thought that was beautiful. Number 7 is The Proposal with Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds.
Yep.
Oh, number 6 wasn't on any of your lists is Always Be My Maybe. Do you know that movie?
I know of it. I have not seen it though.
Again, that could have been my recency effect because I saw it recently, but I thought it was just charming and just lovely. I use that word too much, lovely. Speaking of lovely, number 5 is Love Actually. And that's one of those movies I couldn't tell. I know Colin Firth was in it. I couldn't tell you much more about it, but I just remember afterwards just being elated. So that's number 5. Number 4 is Working Girl, because not only was it like a love story, but it was also her emergence as a working girl. And I loved the music in that movie. I think the music really helped that.
Great music.
Oh, that's one of my favorite songs, Let the River Run by Carly Simon. Just a great anthem.
Yes.
And you don't get anthems in romantic comedies, but that one worked and it worked beautifully.
Exactly. Number 3 was The Holiday, which I again saw recently. That's with Kate Winslet and Cameron Diaz. And it was just like a sappy, sweet, love-infested movie. You never know if they're going to get together. You feel nervous that Jack Black is going to go back with his bitchy girlfriend. Can I say that on the air? And I just did. Number 2 is Annie Hall. And my number 1, I don't know if anybody can guess what my number 1 favorite romantic comedy movie is. It is Groundhog Day.
Ah, very nice.
Did anybody else have that one?
I had it as number 10 on mine.
I love that movie because it shows how people can change And so it's less about the romance and the comedy and more that it gave me a larger life lesson that people can really change and that we have all the time in the world. So maybe that was my number one for the wrong reason, but
no, it's a good movie.
Yeah. Bill Murray. Have you seen the documentary about Bill Murray?
Not yet. I hear it's fantastic though.
He shows up at random places. He'll sing karaoke with a group of strangers. He'll walk into a party and just start playing the drums or washing the dishes. I said, even during the pandemic, if Bill Murray came over and wanted to come in for dinner, I would let him.
And what's the old hypocrisy? I don't know if this is legend or truth, but Murray used to show up, like you say, at weddings or bar mitzvahs or what have you, and do something like buy everybody a shot or do something, and then look at the person closest to him and go, nobody's ever going to believe you, and then walk out.
That's great. We love your list. And there was a couple of nice fresh takes on there on things that we had not talked about yet. But Annie Hall, like I said,
Always Be My Maybe.
Yeah, I got to look at that.
Always Be My Maybe.
Is that your sleeper?
My sleeper is Sleepless in Seattle. No, I don't. I guess that was my sleeper. Always Be My Maybe.
Now, this is a great list.
Well, there's always something that we pick up from the guests, and Jeremy Arnold was on our show when we talked about holiday viewing, and he mentioned a couple older movies that we had never seen before, and he sold them. So we're constructing a new list of things we must see, and you just added another one to that.
What were your top two?
Kirk's top two was Arthur and When Harry Met Sally, and that in reverse order, When Harry Met Sally was his number one. My top two, number one was When Harry Met Sally as well. And then Shakespeare in Love was my number two.
I love that too. See?
And so
they're all great.
I know. And that's the thing about this. You can mention things and you go, oh yeah. Oh yeah. You know, the fact that Say Anything and Annie Hall didn't make my list kills me. They were both almost there. I love both of those movies. Bull Durham, same thing. It's hard.
I was the same with Working Girl.
You should do top 20 lists from now on.
The thought of that is just killing me as we speak.
Yeah, truly. Ooh, look at the time. We got to go.
What's next for Wendy Lehman? Anything coming up in the near future? And how can people follow you on social media if they want to?
So I'm on Twitter at Wendy Lehman, and I'm doing a lot of Zoom stand-up comedy shows, although I'm sitting down, so it's perfect. And I'm writing a musical about three stand-up comedians in Las Vegas over Valentine's Day in 2017. So that's been my passion recently, is writing a musical about stand-up comedy called Home on Tuesday.
Well, we can't thank you enough for being here.
Thank you so much for having me on, you guys.
Well, it's been a pleasure. And
Wendy, this has been an absolute pleasure.
And hopefully we...
Mine.
Yeah, no. And hopefully we see you down the road again, depending on where the show goes. We're going to have a lot of topics, a lot of things to talk about. So.
Yeah, please come back.
Be well. Stay safe. Thanks again, Wendy.
I would love that.
We appreciate it.
Okay. And be in love and lots of laughter to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, well, that was great, and that wraps it up for the guest list, which brings us to...
The Populist.
And once again, we had a few ties, but we had some interesting things on The Populist. For number 10, the listeners chose Pretty in Pink, the John Hughes, Molly Ringwald film. For number 9, we had a tie with Say Anything, the John Cusack film, French Kiss, Broadcast News, Heart and Souls, and Bull Durham. Number 8 was also a tie with My Best Friend's Wedding, Julia Roberts movie, Tootsie, Clueless, the Alicia Silverstone movie, and Bridget Jones' Diary with Renee Zellweger. Number 7 all by itself was What's Up, Doc? Number 6 was Shakespeare in Love, Moonstruck, Annie Hall, You've Got Mail, and Notting Hill, another Julia Roberts, Hugh Grant movie. Number 5 was a tie between The Princess Bride and Groundhog Day. Number 4 was Jerry Maguire, Arthur, and There's Something About Mary. All Alone in number 3 was Sleepless in Seattle. All Alone in number 2 was Pretty Woman. And the number one, just like Kirk and I had, was When Harry Met Sally. So seems to be a pretty popular choice, pretty universal choice by everybody. Very beloved movie. I'm not surprised that it wasn't there or that it is there. What about you?
I was just surprised that the tie across number four, I guess the criteria was you had to have a first name.
And in one case, only a first name. Yeah, it's all good movies,
only
though.
Only a first name, yes.
Yeah, all good movies. I know Jerry Maguire and There's Something About Mary definitely got a lot of consideration for my list. And Jerry Maguire, more than almost anything, with maybe the exception of Bull Durham, really came close to my list. But good job, listeners.
Well, you know, I think we talked about it, too, where we said this was going to be the most varied and the list full of the most variety, because there were so many great choices, because you can go back, you know, almost 90 years in filmmaking to look at a whole roster of films. So that's why I really enjoyed this topic. It gave us the chance to kind of stretch our legs and really come up with a different and varied list to compare and contrast.
Yeah. And I hope listeners, if they haven't seen some of the movies we've talked about or some of the movies Wendy talked about, that you are able to make some time and see them, because I think they're all very worthy and they all bring something. I already know that I know I wasn't feeling the old movies, but I definitely want to go back and watch The Philadelphia Story again, which I do love. And it is traditionally one of my favorite older films, but it's just been a while. Same thing. I want to see Woman of the Year, which I've not seen in decades, and got to see that again for sure. Well, that brings us to one of our standard segments, and that is the A-list. And today for Valentine's Day, we're going to do a bit of a departure as we name our A-listers. And our A-listers this week are Kirk's and mine, significant others. We thought that was appropriate. My A-lister is my wife, Sean, and she's been my love, my confidant, my partner in all things fun. My special reserve list person. She's been there through my ups and downs for almost 28 years, and she still makes me look forward to date nights and the quiet times and everything in between. So just couldn't be happier that I spent COVID with her. She is definitely my A-lister, my wife, Sean.
And that's kind of coincidental, because my A-lister is also Sean. kidding. It's a wonderful choice, Stephen. And God, you just said that you guys have been together for 28 years, and that just boggles my mind. I can't believe that that wedding in Hawaii was over two decades ago.
Which you were in, yes.
But it's been a pleasure. Yeah, but it's been a pleasure just watching you guys grow together and raise two beautiful sons and enjoy a wonderful life together. And I think she's an absolutely great choice. And like Steve, my A-lister is the love of my life as well, Jill. Jill and I actually met almost the same time Steve and I did. Jill was also That's a right. tour guide at Universal back in the mid 80s. We lost touch for a long, long time, reconnected on social media. And this September, we'll be together almost 4 years. Jill is an incredible woman. She is beautiful. She is smart. She is strong. She's a wonderful mother, raising two strong, bright, intelligent, thoughtful young men. I couldn't be luckier to have her in my life. And I absolutely look forward to growing old with her together. So happy Valentine's Day, Jill. I love you.
Yeah, that's one of the great stories of my various friends, of you guys finding each other again. And it seems weird that we've known her for so long, but then there was that big gap. So she doesn't know all the stories. I mean, she does by now, but we were catching her up on things, because it seems like, yeah, you remember. Oh, that's right. That was during the dark period where we had lost touch.
I'm glad you reminded me that we put her through all that. I'm going to have to really up my Valentine's Day game this year.
Yeah, I think both Jill and Sean deserve a little extra special bottle of champagne for everything they put up with. That about does it for this episode. It's been a very different episode, but fun one. It's always great to take those dives into the topics. Next time, we're going to be tackling best women leads of rock. So those female musicians and singers who make rock rock, we're going to be talking about them. Go to the site, populouspodcast.net, and vote. We'd love to hear your opinions. The poll will be up as soon as you hear this podcast.
Happy Valentine's, everybody. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, Google, iHeartRadio, Pandora, or wherever you go for your great fine podcasts. We are a member of the Buzzsprout community, and Populist is a Vintage Year production.
You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/populistpodcast. And we value your listenership, and we value each and every one of you. We hope you continue to listen. Go to the website, as I mentioned, and we will definitely see you all next week. Thanks for coming by and spending a little time with us. Bye-bye, everyone.
Stay safe, everybody. Bye-bye.